From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available on iTunes.
Hi, I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. This week, we're bringing you a special edition of our program filled with local music and essays and poetry for this magical time of the year. Do stay tuned. It's all awaiting you after the latest news from NPR.
The Bringer of Light. Now there is a Christmas tree standing in the living room in front of the door to the balcony, and a little boy holds a string of lights to help his daddy light their little corner of the world. Peyton Benjamin Werner Lahm is 2 and holding the light to his face, bathing himself in it, holding it up to his German-American opa so that no one will be left out. He is our little bringer of light into a world that so easily goes dark. Both the light he holds and the smile he gives help us see better what our blessings are, what we might be able to give others, and what his life and light give to us.
Thank you.
We began our holiday edition of The Art of the Matter with a reading by Indiana's first poet laureate, Norbert Kropf. He gave us The Bringer of Light. Norbert has a new book of poetry in the works for early 2018 called Cheerios in Tuscany, Poems by and for a First-Time Grandpa. And we heard two tracks written and played by pianist Gary Walters, Marmalade and Energy of Hope. Both are from Gary's 2017 CD, The Way Through. Finally, we heard the Indianapolis Children's Choir sing The Sussex Carol and We Are Lights. From Meditations on Light, we turn to the high hopes and expectations we all hold for this time of year, for new beginnings, for salvation, and maybe, if you're a child, for the perfect, eagerly anticipated gift. Melissa Frederigo reads her essay about a desperately desired baby doll.
As a child, my family called me Little Mama. The second of three children and first girl, I tried to do everything my mother did, from unpacking groceries to potty training my little sister, by bringing her to the bathroom anytime I had to go. By the time I was 8 and Christmas neared, I was ready to become a mother in earnest. Baby Alive was the doll that would make this reality come true. She came with packets of food and a bottle, and after feeding her, she would wet herself. I loved the idea of mixing a baby's cereal, spooning it into her mouth until she was full, putting her down for a nap, changing her diaper upon waking, and then doing it all over again. What could be more real, more lifelike than that? On Christmas morning, I sprung out of bed, shook my sister awake, and then the two of us woke our brother and rushed toward the living room. The tree was heaped with presents, and soon Mom and Dad tumbled out of bed to join us. Mom drank coffee in her terry cloth robe, while Dad took photos with a flash so bright we saw stars. It didn't matter. Papers flew. There were yelps of delight and clapping. Our stockings were filled with Hershey Kisses, oranges, and new underwear. But it was puzzling. I tore through every package addressed to me without finding Baby Alive. There was a doll for me, only she had short curled hair and was as large as a monkey, with outstretched arms and blue eyes that closed when laid down. I burst out crying. "What's wrong?" Mom asked, wiping sleep from her eyes. I held the new doll at arm's length and told her I wanted Baby Alive. "Santa must have made a mistake," I said. "Santa doesn't make mistakes," she said, her voice as solid as cement. I looked back at the new doll. She was big and bulky, and her arms were arranged as if something stuck her beneath the armpits. My other doll clothes were too small on her, and after we cleaned up the wrapping paper and had breakfast, Mom lugged from the attic a box of clothes that we'd worn as infants. There were sweaters of the softest wool, sleeveless jumpsuits, and sundresses with embroidered flowers. I remember Mom holding up items, exclaiming, "I haven't seen this in years!" I remember her placing my new doll on the kitchen table and carefully pulling the sleeves of a pink cardigan over its arms. There were pearl buttons that she fastened before lifting her upright ever so gently. "There you go," she said to the doll, before easing her into my arms. I patted the doll's back as if she'd been crying. It seemed like the right thing to do. Even now, I cannot tell you this doll's name. Unlike Baby Alive, she didn't eat food or drink from a bottle, but there was a surprising realness to her. Something in her turned Mom from the dirty dishes to our makeshift changing table, where together we dressed the doll in our hand-me-downs. When I look back at photos from my 8th Christmas, my face is red and splotchy from crying, my mouth a tight fist, but in my arms I'm holding the new doll. She's propped awkwardly at my waist, looking at me with her blue plastic eyes, waiting to see what I might do.
Thank you.
Composer and pianist Becky Archibald played her arrangements of traditional carols from her CD called The Christmas One. Melissa Praterigo read her memory of a not-quite-as-wished-for gift. Melissa is the founder of the Lafayette Writers Studio, and her new novel, Glory Days, is receiving accolades. Thanks for listening to our holiday edition of The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. No matter what your faith, there are fables you've likely been taught that aim to set you on the path to virtue. Writer Mark Allen tells a cautionary tale about children taking stories too literally.
My story is called God Bless You, A True Story. Evan was 7 when he asked his dad, "Why do we say God bless you when someone sneezes?" "So they'll stay alive," said his dad, who was busy looking up basketball scores on his phone. "So if we don't say God bless you, they'll die?" "That's right, kiddo. If you don't say God bless you, then God kills you. So always say God bless you." And Evan did. To his family, to his schoolmates, to strangers who thought that that was adorable. Such nice manners, they would say. Evan was a one-boy God bless you patrol. Evan told his friends about the importance of saying God bless you, but they didn't believe him, except for Joey, who said, "Really?" Evan said it was true. Later on, Evan asked his dad, "Dad, if you don't say God bless you to someone, do they just die right there?" "No, son. If no one says God bless you, the person who sneezes has to lie down on the nearest couch and put a blanket over his head so the angels know he's dead and it's easier for them to take him away," said Evan's dad, who was texting his boss about something or other. "What if there's no couch?" Evan asked. "There's always a couch," Dad said. Evan told his friends. "Really?" said Joey. "My dad said it's true." Joey kept the information in the back of his mind. It was good to know. One day, Joey's mom said, "I have to run to the store. I'm going to leave you home alone for a few minutes, okay?" "Okay," yelled Joey, who was playing with his PlayStation 3. "Just stay in the house," his mom said. Not long after his mom went out, Joey sneezed. "Oh, no," Joey yelled. "I need someone to say God bless you." Joey called Evan. "Evan, I just sneezed. If someone sneezes and no one's around, how much time do you have for someone to say God bless you?" "I don't know," Evan said. "Let me ask my dad." "Dad, how much time do people have to say God bless you before they die?" "I'm in a meeting, Evan," said his dad, who was sitting on the couch watching TV. "Just tell me how long." "5 minutes," Evan's dad said. "Can people say it over the phone?" "Yes, but it does no good. It has to be in person." Evan delivered the news. Joey wasn't sure when his mom was coming home, and he couldn't chance that she'd be there soon. So he ran out of the house to see his friend Timmy, who lived across the street. He ran so fast that he didn't see his mom's car coming. Joey woke up in the hospital with a broken arm and a concussion, his parents at his bedside. "Oh, Joey, oh, sweetie," said his mom, showering him with kisses. "What happened?" his dad said. "I was running across the street to get someone to say God bless you." "Why?" "Evan told me that if you sneeze and no one says God bless you in 5 minutes, you die." Joey's dad, who was a lawyer, sued Evan's parents and won a sizable settlement that forced Evan's parents to sell their house. They moved into the only apartment they could afford over a muffler shop, and Evan's dad never made up another story again. The end.
Tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
Brent Miedema's playful multi-track band is Iron Reindeer, and the CD's called Sleigh Ride. Yup, you guessed it, S-L-A-Y, Ride. And Mark Allen gave us a tongue-in-cheek tale about being careful when you try to scare your kids by making up stories. Reinvention is at the heart of the turning of the year. A new life, a new year, a new revelation. Iranian-American poet Kaveh Akbar brings a poem of being consumed by the fire and rising anew.
This poem is called Every Drunk Wants to Die Sober, It's How We Beat the Game. Hazrat Ali, son-in-law of the Prophet, was martyred by a poisoned sword while saying his evening prayers, his final words, I am successful. I am successful. I want to carve it into my forehead. I've been cut into before. It barely hurt. I found my body to be hard and bloodless as glass. Still for effect, I tore my shirt to tourniquets. Let me now be calm for 1 second. Let me be open to revision. Eternity looms in the corner like a home invader saying, don't mind me, I'm just here to watch you nap. If you throw prayer beads at a ghost, they will cut through him soft as a saber through silk. I finally have answers to the questions I taught my mother not to ask, but now she won't ask them. As a child, I was so tiny and sweet, she would tuck me in, saying, Mush bukradet, a mouse should eat you. I melted away that sweet like sugar and water, like once fresh honey dripping down a thigh. Today, I lean on habit and rarely unstrap my muzzle. It's hard to speak of something so gauche as ambition while the whole wheezing mosaic chips away. But let it be known, I do hope one day to be free of this body's dry wood. If living proves anything, it's that such astonishment is possible. The kite, loosed from its string, outpaces its shadow. An olive tree explodes into the sky, dazzling even the night. I don't understand the words I babble in home movies from Tehran, but I assume they were lovely. I have always been a tangle of tongue and pretty want. In Islam, there are prayers to return almost anything, even prayers to return faith. I have been going through book after book, pushing the sounds through my teeth. I will keep making these noises as long as deemed necessary until there is nothing left of me to forgive.
Thank you.
Iranian-American poet and Purdue professor Kaveh Akbar read his piece, Every Drunk Wants to Die Sober, It's How We Beat the Game. And Monica Herzig and friends played Give Peace Every Chance. Speaking of peace, we end today's program the way we began, with a poem to a little child and the hope he gives to the worldly adults in his life. Here's Norbert Krof standing before the Christmas tree.
Standing before the Christmas tree. He's never far from the light, this little man of two whose eyes and smile so often shine. Peyton's father hands him the ornaments. He gives them to his mother. She hangs them on the tree. The same evening, a semi-truck smashes into and through festive people in the Christmas market in Berlin, the family recently visited. His parents do not tell him about this. Sometimes we must maintain steady light where dark encroaches. Now the little boy stands before the well-lit and fully decorated tree on this mixed night, holding his hands together and looking pleased, then puts one hand on his cheek as his mouth opens wider and wider into a smile. On his head appears a red and white Christmas hat with a big white ball dangling down in back from the top. I want my grandson to hear, on a night like this, soft and soothing strains of silent night to lift a world not calm or bright into the joy of sacred light.
Listening to our house band, the Buseli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra, and Everett Green from their Carol of the Bells album. And we heard Norbert Krof read his poem, Standing Before the Christmas Tree. Thanks for spending some time with The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. All of the artists featured on today's show are from Central Indiana. And if you like what you hear, please look for their work and support them. And from all of us at The Art of the Matter,
Merry Christmas!
The Savior. brilliant beams from thy holy face. With the dawn of redeeming grace, Jesus, Lord, at thy birth.
Listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.